lovely listeners. You've just tuned in to It's Time for the Talk with Dr. Faye Weisberg. This is the podcast that's not afraid to dive deep into the world of sexual health with curiosity, respect, and a touch of humor. I'm Deborah Myers, your co-host and fellow explorer in this fascinating terrain, alongside my co-host, Dr. Weisberg. A little bit about Dr. Weisberg, a gynecologist and reproductive medicine specialist, the clinic director of First Steps Fertility and FemRenew, an assistant professor at the University of Toronto, and a gynecologist at Sunnybrook Hospital. A graduate of the University of Manitoba School of Medicine, completed her postgraduate training at the University of Toronto in obstetrics and gynecology. She continued to pursue further postgraduate work in laparoscopy surgery at the Houston Medical Center, as well as more in-depth training at the Reproductive Partners Fertility Clinic in California. Dr. Weisberg's team at FemRenew embraces innovative strategies. Her patients' experience improved health and well-being, empowering them to take charge of their own sexual wellness journey. No stranger to discussing and treating vaginal health issues with her patients, Dr. Weisberg is always looking for a new advancement in medical technology, the latest being the exciting world of platelet-rich plasma, also known as PRP, and the O-Shot. So buckle up for a ride that's informative, positive, and judgment-free. Okay, then, it's time for the talk. Let's get into it. Hello, Dr. Weisberg.
Hi,
welcome.
I'm really excited to be doing this podcast. I think there's so much to explore, and there's so much need to educate our listeners about what's available and what happens to us as we age.
This is kind of scary for some of the audience, but yet I think there's a little bit of that curiosity that I shared at the beginning of the intro. We need to help them get out of that and be free in their talk. So what do you think we should first talk about?
And I see this in my patients over and over and over again, is like, why didn't anyone tell me? Why didn't I know? Why didn't I understand that I needed to worry about my vaginal health as I age? You know, they'll say, I know I have to check my breasts. I know I'm at risk for heart disease. I know I'm at risk for osteoporosis. But, you know, I'd have sex with my husband and it hurt. It felt like glass shards coming into me, and I had no idea what was happening, nor did I expect it, and nor do I know what to do with it. The other thing is they're shy. Women don't want to go talk to their friends and their Maj groups and their golf partners and say, do you have trouble? Mm-hmm. Some do, but most don't. And then they're sort of left in a lurch. Often they'll go visit their family physician, who might prescribe something without looking and without exploring or without having the talk. So I'm really excited to be able to have the talk, to have a safe space. I have little posters and little buttons in my office that people look at all the time. They feel comfortable. And then we start talking. And that's really exciting.
Well, I've seen some of those buttons and posters, and I got to tell you, they are real fun and they're calming. And so you do provide a safe space, which is wonderful. And I think I will thank you for that. And I'm sure others will thank you for that in the future. So let's talk about what happens to the vagina when we age.
So the vagina is an estrogen-dependent organ. So that means that we need estrogen for the vagina to be soft and pink and moist and supple and respond. And when we go through menopause, or if we go through menopause early, or at times in our life, like being on a birth control pill or after having a baby, when estrogen levels are low, the vagina will respond by getting thin and pale and almost lifeless. There's no lubricant, there's no blood flow, and there's no response. Sometimes we fix it after having a baby when you finish breastfeeding and it comes back. But as we age and go through menopause, unless you're on hormone replacement therapy, and even sometimes that's not enough, the vagina stays as it is. But that has other implications. It's not just a dry vagina that hurts when you have intercourse. It's also the bladder. The bladder sits on top of the vagina. It also needs estrogen. So a lot of women will complain of feeling like they have to go to pee all the time and nothing's there, or they're uncomfortable, or they lose urine, or they have frequent bladder infections. So losing estrogen affects not just the vagina, it also affects the bladder. And when women have stress incontinence or they're uncomfortable with their bladder, it leads to trouble leaving. They don't want to get out of their house. They don't want to have social interactions because they're worried. So it's a whole, ball going down the hill that leads to a lack of self-esteem, isolation, not feeling good about yourself, which leads to lowering the libido, which is also low because it hurts so much.
Right.
So it's a cry for help that's like the silent scream. We don't hear it because women are embarrassed.
They're embarrassed. And you know, now that we're opening up this conversation, you know, is there a way that they can understand that can stop this and make a change in their life? What can help them today?
Well, I think women need to go seek medical attention. Go see a doctor who's open and understanding to these changes. I see so many women who go to their doctors and they'll say, it hurts when I have sex. And they immediately give them some form of estrogen replacement for their vagina, which is safe and it's local, but without examining women and looking to see where is the pain coming from, often the treatment's incorrect. Because it's not just pain with intercourse. So if a woman says, I have pain when I have sex, I can't have sex, the question is, does it hurt when the penis goes in? Does it hurt when the penis is in? Or does it hurt after? Mm-hmm. And if you don't ask that question, you don't know what to treat. So it's really important that women see a doctor who's knowledgeable, who understands, who can say, okay, let's go figure this out. And when you examine women, sometimes it's pain at the entrance of the vagina, which is often environmental, and I'll talk about that in a second. Sometimes the vagina is dry and pale and bleeds when you touch it, and then it's vaginal dryness per se. And sometimes there's other things that are going on. Maybe there's fibroids or a mass on the ovary or something else that's causing pain. So it's not just estrogen all of the time. And one of the things that is sort of my sort of push to what I want happening is women to understand how to take care of their vaginas and vulvas when they get older. Mm. So, you know, when we're in our menstrual phase of our life, we have hair, we have fat around the area, so we're very protected from environmental things that can affect the vagina. But when we go through menopause, all of that dryness happens, and we also lose fat protection, we lose hair protection, so the vagina is exposed. And if it gets itchy or if it gets sore, if it's dry, the first thing we think about is, oh my God, it's dirty, I have an infection, and they take the soap and they wash, and that makes it worse. So soap is full of chemicals that will irritate the vulva and the vagina. And the first thing I tell women is don't use soap. Right. They get pale. They get sweaty. What do you mean I can't use soap? We have bacteria that keep everything clean. Water, water, water only. And I tell patients, if you think it's soap, don't use it. Even if it's something else, don't use it. And then they'll go, oh, I don't use soap. I use Dove, which is probably one of the worst things to do. So I think that the first thing is understand how to take care without even going on any medication. No soap, soft toilet paper, dab, don't wipe, mm-hmm. and stay away from baby wipes. Baby wipes have tons of chemicals. If you feel the need, women, to use any sort of moist tissue after having a bowel movement or after urinating, the washable or the disposable Cottonelle wipes or the disposable wipes you can buy over the counter that are not baby wipes work fine.
You know, this is an interesting conversation whereby if someone's going to their doctor to have this talk, I'm going to guess that physician's not going to say what you just said. And where would the patient today go to actually learn more about this? I mean, this podcast is great. This is good. But where do we learn more about it?
Well, patients will say, oh yeah, my friend told me not to use soap, mm-hmm. or my friend who saw you told me not to use soap. But, you know, come to FemRenew. I'm happy to talk. I'm happy to educate and not even treat. Like, I think that women need the information, and information is power. And if that's all we need, then I've done a good job for you.
Yeah, I think that's great, Dr. Weisberg. I think the other thing we want to understand is, because you touched on hormones for a couple of seconds there, and what non-hormonal treatments are available? Because sometimes patients don't want to touch hormones. They're like, oh, I've never been on hormones. I don't want to be on hormones. You know, so there's that big taboo conversation.
Right, so that's a whole other conversation about hormone replacement therapy. But treating the vagina for dryness, the actual vagina that needs estrogen, there are local treatments. So you can give estrogen in little tablets that don't absorb into the bloodstream and aren't hormone replacement therapy. It's just local estrogen that often solves the problem. And it takes a lot of time to explain that to a patient. Sometimes they don't buy into it, but it's true. They're very, very safe. But non-hormonal medications really depends on what we're treating. So a lot of women will buy moisturizers over the counter for their vagina. Sometimes they work. They won't restore estrogen. They won't restore the tissue, but they might make the vagina feel better. And there's a difference between moisturizers and lubricants. Mm. So a moisturizer is like putting on hand cream in the morning and you hope that your hands stay soft and supple for the rest of the day. A lubricant is something that you're going to use maybe to put on a glove that it fits, right? So if moisturizers go in the vagina, they hopefully keep it sort of moist, and some women feel like if they sit down, their vaginas are scratchy and that helps them. A lubricant is something you're gonna use for intercourse. So vaginal moisturizers can work. The problem is sometimes the vagina is so dry that they don't absorb, and then they just sort of clump up in the vagina, and that leads to all sorts of other problems. So, there are moisturizers, there are lubricants for intercourse, but anything that you use as a lubricant really needs to have the least amount of chemicals possible. So,
and I would think that our audience, you know, is possibly trying this already. And you know, I'm sure they're like, they've tried it, they've done the moisturizer, they've done the lubricant, and they're like, you know, we're still, this isn't happening. Is there anything better that can help them out?
So there's non-hormonal methods that we can use to help treat vaginal atrophy that we have at FemRenew. One of them is the Mona Lisa laser touch, and the other one that we'll talk about is using platelet-rich plasma.
That's known as PRP.
PRP.
Right on.
Yeah, a lot of women go, what's PRP? And I go, platelet-rich plasma, and then they're even more confused. So we'll talk about it, educate everybody on this podcast about that. So the Mona Lisa laser was introduced in 2013 already. It's a product that was developed by a dermatologist, gynecologist, and pathologist in Italy. So there's lots of hands on deck for that. And what it does is it causes little bits of inflammation in the vagina to heal it. We bring in collagen and fibroblasts and blood flow. So that's what the vagina needs. So I always tell my patients, imagine biting the inside of your cheek over and over and over again. It's going to change. And it changes. It becomes a little thicker. It bleeds a little more. There's definitely a change of thickness. And that's what we want in the vagina. So we're making little bits of inflammation in the vagina. The body heals it. And then we do it again 6 weeks later and it heals again, but less slow because it's hard to keep up with what we've done. And by the third treatment, the vagina actually stays that way.
Are you telling the patients at this point to not have any intercourse and let this process take its place, or can they still try intercourse at this point?
Oh, no, they absolutely can have intercourse. So we do the treatment. I tell them to wait for 48 hours. And when a woman comes in with a really sort of dry vagina and I do the treatment, I say there might be a little bit of bleeding. Don't worry about it. And I also say that you'll notice that your vagina feels better for about a week, but then your body will have healed what we've done. But that week will be great, and it will give you hope for what's going to happen in the future. And then they come back 6 weeks later, and this time it pretty much works the whole time. And again, 48 hours before intercourse, and no intercourse for about 2 days before I see them. The laser technology does not go through liquid.
Okay.
So you need to have just the vagina, the skin, the way it is for the three treatments. So it's the three treatments that are 6 weeks apart. And then there's when a woman starts to feel dry again, because it doesn't last forever, usually 6 to 9 months, we do a top up that will last them for another 6 to 9 months.
That's really good.
It works great for pure vaginal dryness. And it also helps with frequent bladder infections and bladder symptoms because it will also help the base of the bladder. So that's a real positive add back. And I have women with frequent bladder infections that come and do the Mona Lisa laser for that reason. It also works great for women who've had breast cancer treatment, who really don't want any estrogen therapy. Mm. And often the adjunct therapy that they use after chemotherapy keeps everything so dry and anti-estrogen. And the Mona Lisa laser works beautifully for them. So it's really a nice thing to offer to patients who are overcoming breast cancer treatments.
That's a great service.
Yeah. In fact, when I first got the Mona Lisa laser, I went to the breast cancer clinics and I said, let me see your patients. I'm not going to charge them. Let's get this product going for your patients so that we can see if it works. And these women were so happy.
Oh, Dr. Weisberg, that is really nice of you to do that. It's good hope.
Yeah,
fantastic. It's good hope. All right. Well, the Mona Lisa sounds interesting. What else do you have to offer?
So the next thing that I have to offer is that's brand new, is PRP, or platelet-rich plasma therapy.
Now, I've heard about PRP. I have friends that are having PRP done on their knee and PRP on their face. Like,
so PRP is really exciting therapy.
PRP in the vagina.
PRP really? In the vagina and around the vagina. So we know that platelets, which is platelet-rich plasma, so it's what we do is we take your patient's blood and we put it in a special centrifuge, and then we get the red blood cells at the bottom and the platelet-rich plasma at the top. Platelets are full of regenerating proteins. They bring in all sorts of healing proteins. They decrease inflammation. They do all of these things. They plump tissue up. That's what we put in our face. I actually had PRP in my knee, and after 6 or 7 weeks, it was pain-free. It was amazing.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, so what happened... I'm going to take a step back. The reason I got into PRP was actually just because I started seeing a lot of women with a special skin condition called lichen sclerosis.
Yes.
It's very, very common. And I think it's more common because women are now complaining about being itchy on their vulvas and vaginas that maybe they never complained about in my mother's age group.
And is that the description? Like, can you describe to us?
So yeah, lichen sclerosis is a skin condition specific to the vulva. Mm-hmm. So anywhere from the clitoris to the bottom of the vagina, women will complain of itching, but also women might complain of burning or little tiny cuts. So it's not just the itching, it's the burning and tiny little cuts. And again, often they'll go to their family doctor and get vaginal estrogen, or they'll send them to a dermatologist. But this is really common, and it's really common in women that are postmenopausal, probably because the skin thins out and it loses its protection, so it's more likely to come up. It's common in girls before puberty, again, no estrogen. And I'm seeing it a little bit more and more in women who are in their menstrual years because they're complaining of being itchy. So I think that women are more likely to complain about things than they were years ago, where, you know, we rarely like to go to doctors and talk about things that are embarrassing and just suck it up, buttercup. So I think that a lot of women years ago never complained. So I'm seeing a lot of this lichen sclerosis. And I was getting frustrated because the hallmark treatment for lichen sclerosis is using a steroid cream, which is a high potent steroid cream. Women are afraid to use steroid creams because they say, "Oh, thin my skin," or, you know, it's hormones, or there's sort of lack of good information for what a steroid cream is. So, you know, I'll say, look, we're treating abnormal skin and this will work. And it works in 80% of women that use it properly.
Yes.
But other women, it doesn't work or they don't want to use it. So I started going through research, what works, what can I do? And then I got to PRP. And then I sort of dove in. And there is a lot of literature about using PRP on the vulva, the skin around the vagina, for all sorts of things. And then I got really excited and I started exploring how I could add this to my practice. So that's how I got to PRP. So PRP does a number of really wonderful things, the same way it helps regenerate tissues in our face and deals with inflammation in our knee. It also can regenerate skin and lead to plumping and moisture around the vagina. It will treat lichen sclerosis. And in injecting it into different areas around the vulva will also enhance sexual desire, libido, strength of an orgasm, help with incontinence, urinary incontinence. So it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we have this? Why wouldn't I start doing this? And why wouldn't women love to have this treatment?
Is it painful? Does it take a long time? Will patients be concerned with this conversation?
So it doesn't take, so it takes 5 minutes to spin the blood. Is it painful? No. So I have numbing cream that I've had compounded for me, put it on the vagina, put it in the areas that I'm going to be injecting.
Yes.
And I found that that cream actually works well enough to inject the PRP into the areas around the vagina and the vulva, because putting freezing in actually will hurt and burn. And then once you've had one injection, you may as well have the one that's going to treat.
Right.
Because it's the same amount of pain.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So I as I dove further and further into what was available, I came across the O-Shot. And the O-Shot is a trademark treatment developed by a physician in Alabama, and who also developed the vampire facial, which also uses right. PRP.
Yes. Now, so, is the O for orgasm?
The O, I think the O is for, oh my God, why doesn't everyone have this? But I think that it came out as the orgasm shot.
Right,
but
on.
But I think that it's, oh wow, this is great. Because it really is. So what the O-Shot does is it sort of floods the vulvar area and the vagina with PRP. And so what we do is we inject a little bit. I inject 3 cc's to 4 cc's of platelet-rich plasma into the top of the vagina. Between the top of the vagina and the bladder, there's sort of a blank space that has glands and blood flow. And that helps plump up the vagina, because the platelets, once you inject them, they sort of spread out slowly from the injection site. And they're going to spread out the path of least resistance, which is going to go around the vagina and also to the bladder. So that will help with stress incontinence, which where you cough or sneeze and lose a little bit of urine. It'll also help with bladder infections, and it will help with vaginal dryness, and it will also make the vagina a little tighter.
So when you say vagina dryness, are we actually, is there moisture starting to happen after the fact? Does that dryness go away and there's moisture developing now to make that lubrication a little bit easier with intercourse?
The dryness goes away because the PRP has brought in new blood vessels to bring in blood flow to the vagina.
So it's stimulating that area?
It stimulates the area.
Okay.
Similar to the Mona Lisa, but in a different way. But yeah, the results are the same. It also plumps up the muscles and the tissues around it. So women, after they've had babies, often feel like they're not feeling much around their vagina.
Right.
And the PRP will really help with that as well.
So this is great post having a child.
It is.
Fantastic.
It is. It is. We talked earlier about pain at the entrance to the vagina that I see a lot of with soap use. The use of always sanitary napkins are probably the number one villain in what I see. And women will complain of pain with intercourse, or they'll notice that there's a problem when they go to the doctor and it hurts when they have their pap smears done. Because mm-hmm. anything that touches that skin, it's really inflamed. Steroids will work, but PRP injection also works.
That's great. That's great. And if patients want to learn more about PRP, can they contact you?
They can call the office. They can go to our website. We have a great website available, femrenew.ca. But there's more to the O-Shot.
Really?
We're not done.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
So we inject into the vagina. And then the other part of the O-Shot is to inject it into the area around the clitoris. So everyone goes, oh my God, that's going to kill. I'll talk about how I freeze it, but the clitoris is just the tip of the iceberg for the clitoris. Underneath the tissues and the muscles is actually almost like upside down wishbone. So the tip of the iceberg is the head of the clitoris, but there's also tissue underneath that has a huge amount of blood flow. So what I do is I'll put the numbing cream around the clitoris, and then I use an ice cube for 2 minutes to really numb the area, and then I put freezing in. And the freezing doesn't hurt because the ice cube really numbs the area.
Right.
And then once I've done the injection into the vagina, I will inject 1 cc of the PRP with a tiny, tiny needle around the head of the clitoris. The clitoris doesn't expand. It doesn't get swollen because the PRP goes right into the skin underneath. And what that does is it brings in blood flow to the clitoral head, and it also will escape and spread out the same way that it does in the vagina to the skin around the clitoris, to the labia. It helps with lichen sclerosis in that way, and it also helps enhance sexual response and libido by the blood flow.
Okay, now that sounds exciting and scary all at the same time. So the positive that comes of this? Are patients now enjoying sex again because of this process?
They are. Women really are. And it's interesting that you say scary, because I have a patient that I saw yesterday who has lichen sclerosis, and she's doing pretty well with the steroid cream. And we started talking about PRP and sexual response. And she said, well, my husband has really a bad problem with erectile dysfunction. And if I'm a worry that if you give me this shot, I'm going to be even more frustrated than I already am. So I have to hold myself back and say, okay, you're right. Let's treat this. Let's get your husband a referral to a urologist, figure out what's going on, and then go from there. But I see a lot of women who, after talking to me and talking about their history and doing whatever I do in my office and having the cues about talking about sex, will say, what can you do about my libido?
Right.
It's not the first thing. It's often the last thing. It's sometimes in passing as they leave the office. So
they're probably intimidated and afraid to have this conversation, which is why we're trying to have this open conversation today. And so patients can hear that you're not alone. There are a lot of women having the same. We're a growing society that's open about sex today versus yesterday. So you know, it's great that even on their way out, they stop and pause and then ask the question, because
right.
they're feeling safe.
Right.
They're feeling like they need to get that answer. And it probably would help with, you know, their own person, their self-awareness, as well as their relationships.
So 100%.
Absolutely. This is a great service you're offering. And I think this is wonderful for our patients to be able to come.
It is. Libido is complicated. So there's a million different things that go into a woman's libido. And I, you know, I used to talk to women about not just relationship, because I always go, I love my partner. It's not that. You know, we're busy, we're tired, we're cranky, and that goes into libido as well. But I look at libido as a pilot light. If the pilot light is gone, we're not going to be able to do anything until it gets lit.
Okay.
And that's what the O-Shot will provide.
Thank you. You know, Dr. Weisberg, this was really informative. And as we wrap up our first insightful episode on sexual health, let's reflect on the empowering knowledge that we've shared today. Remembering sexual health is not just a destination. It's a journey towards understanding, self-acceptance, and meaningful connections. And I think you've provided that in this conversation that's allowed us to explore diverse aspects of this intrinsic landscape, aiming a foster community that values our open conversation. I've learned a lot, and I know our audience are probably sitting back smiling and also sitting back saying, you know what, we've got to learn more about this, and we hope to be able to give our audience more of a conversation. Thank you, Dr. Weisberg, for keeping this conversation going and staying curious and helping patients take charge of their sexual health. Dr. Weisberg, thank you.
Thank you.